Hey everyone, I'm Madonna and this is David, a naturopath and holistic counselor. And we wanted to talk today about rejection sensitivity dysphoria.
Dysphoria.
Dysphoria. So it's especially since it's funny, someone was having a go at someone on YouTube this morning who was just bawling her eyes out and, and then an hour later, she got backlash from her followers and she had 413 million of them or something. So she removed it. And it is funny because when I put up videos and then I cop a lot of backlash, like my first inkling is to remove the videos. So, it's a bit of a different thing, but it is interesting how when we get rejected or, comments come in, how quickly we can respond. And anyway, so you've been noticing that you do this sort of thing, or
Oh,
you.
so this is a so rejection sensitivity dysphoria is a part of the ADHD diagnostic criteria. And because
People can have it without having ADHD, of course. So you
people
do not have to have ADD or ADHD to have it.
No, you don't, but generally, because people with ADHD have a standard bunch of symptoms, which are emotional dysregulation and behavioral dysregulation, it's just a standard part of the emotional dysregulation
People might
part.
think that they don't need to continue listening if they don't have ADHD and ADD. This is
Oh,
something
okay.
on its own thing. You can just have a moro reflex without
Okay.
having an ADHD because rejection is a huge part of having an active moro reflex, for
Sure.
example. So there can be other things without ADHD that have this
Okay, so
connected.
all right, so let's have a look.
But part of that criteria,
Okay,
absolutely.
so with part of that criteria is that rejection sensitivity dysphoria actually imitates personality disorders, which are extreme. They're extreme emotional effects, and so it's hard for the people around people with ADHD because they might just have an incredible. What do they describe it as? They describe it as it looks like. With this emotional response externalized, it looks like an impressive instantaneous rage that the personal situation at the person who's responsible for causing real or imagined pain. And so, what the difference is between that and the personality disorder is that this works specifically on rejection sensitive triggers, right? Whereas with a personality disorder, people just like that. They'll be in it because it's a mood disorder, so they'll have this mood that's not really coming from anywhere, whereas this is specific to triggers that make people feel rejected. But like you said the other day when we were discussing it, it's an amygdala response,
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
it's instant.
One five
So
hundredth of a second, your body's already responded to something.
right, so the other thing it's similar to would be then people with post-traumatic stress disorder and they get triggered, or people with complex trauma from childhood, they'll get triggered also, and they'll be similar to that because there's a triggered response. And because it hits the amygdala, it's like almost instant, right? And so it might take a lot of practice to get that into to normalize it, to actually get in a range where we're because it's something that comes on suddenly with people. It's not something they like all the time. It's something if they feel rejected. And some people with ADHD actually have much, like for an example, a social experience I heard recently, like some people I knew, they had an adult friend with ADHD, and they were like they were having a bit of a social discussion that it was disagreed with, but he got really emotional, got up and left. Right, and then later rang back, if you ever get in touch with me, I'm going to do such and such. So it's like, and that guy's got ADHD. So it was like the people I was talking to, I go, look at this article. And they went, oh, right. And all of a sudden it clicks in and you go, oh, okay. And then you see, because these things are all about patterns, right? So if there's not a pattern of, but because when you're in counseling, we're looking for patterns and then go, okay, so these patterns of behaviors, they could be this, they could be that. But the difference is if it's got an ADHD style source, the treatment's slightly different from other things that are similar.
And I suppose part of where we differ on things, you're looking for patterns that allow you to diagnose something.
Not even like people I see with ADHD, they're already diagnosed. Except the thing is that anyone who's been through the process with your kids, you don't get any information at all virtually off the pediatrician
Yeah.
or the psychiatrist.
No, except go on these drugs.
They and but they don't give they don't they don't give so much supporting information or that sort of thing. So often the people I see, it's like actually it's showing them the different websites where they can get the information is the main thing, because people don't know how to find that.
Yeah. Interesting.
And because counselling, and in your thing, you're different with a whole different scope of types of treatment that you have
Yeah, so
available to
I'm more
you.
looking at the symptoms. So I see things as individual symptoms as opposed to
Right.
trying to put together a
Yeah,
complex,
which is the proper way, actually,
you know,
because all
because.
they do in the where they diagnose the symptoms, they get the cluster of the symptoms and go, well, that's
Yeah.
they all kind of match
Yeah.
that, and then
So
they
the
give them a
same
name.
way a psychiatrist might want to call something, you know, this dysphoria, I'd go, they're probably magnesium and potassium and B vitamin deficient. You
But
know,
that
so
but
let's
that's
raise those levels of minerals and
right,
they'll have more resilience
right,
in
and
their
that's
nervous system.
that's also true. And but the problem with this one particularly is that it's often left out of the criteria in the diagnostic
Right.
criteria. So it's not something like it says in the article. This article comes from a website called Attitude, that is ADDITUDE, and you can look up that. They've got lots of really good videos. They're drug absolutists. I don't agree with that. Like when you get up this article, it basically, really, the article's titled "How ADHD Ignites RSD: Meaning and Medication Solutions."
Yeah, right.
And so, and but this particular, these the guy who runs this site, he thinks that people with ADHD should be on stimulants every day for the rest of their life. He's a drug
Awesome. Nothing
absolutist.
wrong with that.
But the thing is that because we're more into metabolic health these days, it's becoming more popular. It's that we know that people with ADHD have dopamine problems. They might have, because of,
Oxytocin issues and serotonin
they might,
issues.
because once one of the hormones is down, they or the neuroreceptors, they
Yeah.
can all, and so to bring them up together, it's like looking at, in metabolic health, which is what you do, whereas seeing my approach is, all right, what behavioral things can we do? What
Yeah.
activities can we do? What foods can we increase? And
Yeah.
then you'll have a bunch of supplements.
Yeah.
That because in this they recommend all sorts of things, but there's certainly supplements that can help just as well as the amphetamine approach.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite little supplements here in Australia for that is Resilient, you know, because it's about 15 Chinese herbs all put together in a beautiful combination, and I don't know why it works so well, but it gives you the I don't give a shit mentality. So
Oh, right. Oh, so it's
yeah,
that part of it.
so it's really like it's really quite amazing that it just picks up people's resilience to
Right.
just about any stresses going on in people's lives if they take it
I
regularly.
wonder if Inflamed, like the one
The saffron and
saffron,
activated
and
turmeric.
I wonder if that, because that flips mood fairly quickly, similar to stimulants,
Yeah.
because they flip it.
Oh, look, there's so many alternatives, and these days they're changing. You know, like they started changing the Parkinson's drug Madopar in 2023 so that now it has mRNA technology in it. So
Oh.
we've just got to be really careful with new generation medications and know what we're actually taking.
Well, the Parkinson's and the what's the other one like that? That
MS,
yeah,
multiple sclerosis,
they're both
dopamine
dopamine
issues. Yeah.
related. So if we can increase our baseline dopamine, we can get my, I don't know how reversible those things are.
Well, you know, I think I told you my guy with the matured hop splitter extracts, he had three jibbity jabs in 2021 and he now has Parkinson's. And I had him on the matured hop splitter extracts and he had the whole rocking and rolling, you know, no control over his nervous system, you know, so during a massage, his leg was moved, you know, there was just, and I had to really help him get his t-shirt off and, you know, get him on the table because he simply had no control over, he's about a year older than me. And then after he'd been on the matured hop splitter extracts for about 3 weeks, I saw him the next time. And it wasn't until about 24 hours later that I noticed, oh, he didn't have that rocking and rolling thing going on yesterday. And this guy, I've known him about 15 years, he's a mumbler. You know,
Right.
he's a serial mumbler. So you have to really concentrate, you know, chatting away to him. It's awful on the phone,
Oh,
but
because
face
it's
to
sort of
face
like
is better.
confounding and touching on earlier.
Yeah, very helpful. So anyway, the last time I saw him, I was going to tell him about the rocking and rolling, you know, how improved it had been the previous time, and I noticed I could understand him.
Right. Oh, really?
Best in 15
Oh.
years. So something, and I don't know what that is. Like, what makes someone mumble? But we had a conversation, and I'm like, I can understand every word he's saying. And for 15 years, I haven't been able to without concentrating really hard.
Well, I mumble a bit.
So the hops are doing something to his nervous
Oh,
system.
that's interesting.
Because he's been on Brahmitone a long time, he's been on fish oils a long time, he's been on inflavonoids, activated turmerics and things a long time.
Well, the fish oils increase. So with dopamine,
Yep.
so what are the L-dopa? L-dopa is the thing, and so what that comes from phenylalanine.
Yep.
Is there, so
Which is an
we,
amino acid.
yeah, so we have to make phenylalanine to make L-dopa. That's one of the hormones with dopamine. The other one is L-tyrosine,
Yep.
and that's available in different foods.
Yep, and tyrosine and iodine is what we tyrosine or tryptophan?
No, L-tyrosine. Tryptophan is a precursor for serotonin.
Yeah, because tyrosine and iodine is also what we need for our thyroid to function properly,
Right,
because
isn't that
iodine and
interesting?
tyrosine we require to make thyroxine.
Right.
So, and most people, well, 1 in 8 women at least, it's probably worse now given health the last couple of years,
Well,
but
the world's becoming more toxic.
it's becoming much more toxic, and the thyroid is a
Physically
big
and
sponge.
emotionally.
Yeah, 100%. So the thyroid's a big sponge because we're breathing things in. It's
Right.
so once people have their sinuses and adenoids removed, then the thyroid is the next area to take on a lot of these toxins, and basically you need iodine and tyrosine to make thyroxine. So as soon as you get diagnosed with thyroid disorder, whether it's Hashimoto's or Graves' disease, well, with Graves, they rip out the thyroid or radiate it so it doesn't work. And then they create an underactive thyroid deliberately so that they can give us, synthetic thyroxine. But the deficiencies of iodine and tyrosine, so that's really interesting that it's linked in with L-DOPA.
Right, because and because the other thing, back to what you said in the beginning, you'd give them magnesium,
Oh, everyone
but
needs
and
magnesium.
also they need omega-3s.
It's the most mineral deficient thing in humans on
Right,
the planet, magnesium.
and it's used to, and so magnesium is used, yeah, to help. What does it do?
Oh, a million things. So
Right,
you can't make
no,
energy. Oh, sorry.
with the L-tyrosine particularly, and the other things. They say in the research that you need magnesium to enable it, and you need omega-3s to enable the dopamine too.
Yeah.
So whether it's whatever source of food you're eating, you need to get good omega-3s either from fish oil they use, don't they? Or really nuts like walnuts have omega-3s.
Yeah.
And so sometimes working on a dopamine deficiency, you need those extras
Yes,
to
absolutely.
go with the L-tyrosine, or I don't know, you can't, phenylalanine, is phenylalanine absorbable? How do you
Yeah,
get,
absolutely.
oh,
That's
okay.
an amino acid.
Is that in some foods?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so and that's easy to look up what foods have phenylalanine, what foods have L-tyrosine.
It's also a precursor to pain hormones as well, phenylalanine. It used to be in some of our
Right.
pain supplements, which was amazing. There was a product, remember, many years ago called Proxam, which we don't have anymore.
Oh, isn't
It
it?
was our number one seller for about 10 years because not only was it for depression and
Right.
bloody awesome, as like it had all of the nutrients you needed to make serotonin, it was so fantastic. The government took it off us, of course, and but it also helped with pain. Because when your serotonin receptors, so a lot of people go on antidepressants for things like fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue and chronic pain conditions. And part of that is because if we're recycling, the SSRIs, recycling that serotonin in the brain, it gives a bit of a pain relief.
Right. Yeah, because there's a relationship between dopamine. Like when people have too much dopamine, the pain goes up with it. And then if you stop the dopamine, you go dopamine faster, you're just left with
Right.
the
Interesting.
pain.
So anyway, back to rejection sensitive dysphoria. So once people recognize that, how would someone recognize that they have this? Obviously,
Well,
they take it overly to heart
hopefully
if.
it's so it'll be it's common with things that where people are already feeling rejected. So people with ADHD have it, but also people with autism, ASD might have it too,
Right.
because there's a it has to do with the brain function.
Yeah.
Because we know how, but so it's like a
On the Enneagram, it could be a four with primitive reflexes, those with an active motor reflex.
right.
People
But
with double gestalt are more likely to have it than people with double logic
okay.
in their brain.
But because it's so instant.
Switch is not the
it's
pleasure
the
reward, then it's.
switch, and suddenly somebody, because they're feeling rejected or someone argues with them or they're criticized, like it comes from criticizing. And the reason people might be like people with ADHD, they get criticized more than other people because not even if they're wrong, but if you're a kid, you're just brought to attention more often than other people. So you can develop a sensitivity to criticism, right? And because you do weird things, because ADHD people tend to bring stuff out and then there's that. But the problem is if it becomes internalized. And what it says in the research is that people become people pleasers. And then because of that, it messes up. Like, for example, I'll give you an example of something that happened to me. So I went out to lunch with a friend who's a counselor the other day. And it's like, it's like, oh, where should we go? And we're like, oh, let's go to this restaurant. And I'd never been there before. And there were two restaurants next door to each other that I liked. And I go, and he goes, why this one? Because I always want. And then when we got there, the menus were all very hard to read. It was actually really, what would you say?
Like dim or
It was
something.
Vietnamese, but it was, no, it just wasn't very, it was very hard to find any vegetarian food,
Okay,
basically.
right. Yep.
And it was just this thing. And then it was like, and then me, because I mumble a bit, I got my order wrong. And then, like, I ended up with this big order for my entree. And then it was a confusing conversation, and the girl was like this. And then I was really embarrassed at the end. So I gave a big tip. You know what I mean? And it was ended up being just this really weird thing. And that was last week sometime. And he said to me on the way out, he goes, well, when you can tell me why it was so, why you had such a weird experience here, then I'll. And then so I went home and it was like, and I was looking up this and I was like, that's what it is. It's a because the things say basically when this emotional response is internalized, that means it's not addressed over many years. It can imitate a full major mood disorder complete with suicidal ideation. So because of that, it's actually, and if anyone has any problems, call for help. But it can be like that, and mood disorders are things like narcissism, or they're talking about borderline personality disorder here, is what it imitates. And so it's like a and so it gets so it's often misdiagnosed as a rapid cycling mood disorder, but it's actually part of the ADHD diagnosis just naturally. And so the thing is, the people pleasing, the two things are that people become people pleasers or they stop trying. Do you know what I mean? If these things happen over time. And most people who've got ADHD into adulthood understand those things. They're like, if I'm just really nice to everyone, this might stop happening. Because they don't want it. They don't want it. They're like, so they try to be really agreeable so they don't get criticized. They don't get in an argument and then that. But then that always crashes because it's a false self. And, and they end up like that takes over their lives and they're not who they are anymore. They're actually this person. Because people pleasing is a, what do they call them? It's a maladaption that people might have from childhood with
I
complex
always,
trauma.
people who are constant apologizers, they just, they step on my foot and they apologize to me.
Right.
I go, you did it again. You just apologize to me, and they can apologize like 10 times in a session. I go, why are you apologizing? And it's almost like they're getting to it before someone abuses them.
Right.
So they're preempting abuse or preempting getting in trouble.
That's
So
a funny.
therefore,
I
they
actually.
apologize because I had this kid stay with us for a while when one of my kids was in high school. He stayed with us for 6 weeks, and every sentence he used to say was, "Oh, I'm sorry, Madonna, but." And after a while, I'm like, "Why do you?" And I said to him, "This is like 30 years ago." I said, "Why do you apologize all the time?" And he goes, "Well, I don't get hit as much at home if I apologize before I speak." So by being a preemptive apologizer,
Right, which
he
is a big thing.
learned not to get hit by his dad.
That's a bit sad, isn't it? Because sadly, a lot of people don't apologize
He had
even when they're
full-blown
terrible to people. Right.
ADHD. Yeah. Anyway.
Funny, I was watching a documentary about a guy who was in a cult on the weekend, and he was saying that he got so much like that that he tripped over a chair and inflexibly apologized to the chair.
That is pretty funny. Yeah, well, this is, it's sort of interesting, isn't it, if you sort of think of it as something that we can change, because how many people just have no idea that we can even change?
Right.
And I think this is the thing about people, like even going back 20, 30 years ago, it wouldn't have occurred to a lot of people's parents, for example, to look at their emotional state and what they could do about it, because it just wasn't discussed.
And people don't have skills, or the thing is, it's good now. There's so much self-help
Yeah.
available on the internet, but still people don't know what they're looking
Well,
for.
I'll tell you a little story I was listening to, and this might upset some of our viewers, depending on where you sit politically, but I like Tucker Carlson. I was listening to him, some guy I've never heard of, and I've got no idea why he was interviewing him, but a really wealthy guy who was talking about feeling rejected his whole life. And he was saying, and he's rich, he's from like Silicon Valley and, made something for 10 years, just made oodles of money. And he actually mentioned the planes and the boats and the cars and the watches and stuff as the stuff he had. And, but he never, nothing ever made him feel good enough about himself, which is interesting, isn't it? Because, you sort of assume, that if you got all that crap, you're going to feel pretty good
You're gonna
about
have some good
yourself.
self-esteem.
Yeah. So, but no. So his wife ended up setting him up a regular card game.
Right.
So once a week, and apparently he travels all over the world, but he always makes sure he's at home every week to have a card game with his mates. And his wife set it up because she knew they were all sort of nerdy Silicon Valley guys with no self-esteem, even though they were all rich.
Right.
So she sort of got this thing going. And after watching them, they're sort of sitting there playing their cards like head down. For like 9 hours straight without even looking at each other. So after this happened a few times, she thought, this is crap. We're going to take a break at 7 o'clock every time you get together. We're going to have dinner. You're going to look each other in the eyes and you're going to have real conversations. And he's been doing it now for a couple of years. And every single one of these guys would never miss a night because of what they actually get out of that. Because how few people look each other in the eye these days?
Right. Well, do you know
Even if
that?
you're in a one-on-one conversation, how easy is it to grab your phone and, go, oh yeah, that's a good point, and all of a sudden you're distracted again because someone says something, you're, oh, I want to look that up. It's
Right.
so easy. It's so easy to get distracted.
That's interesting because, that social interaction like that'll be increasing serotonin. Just having a nice meal together. And so that'll increase the different positive hormones.
And the funny thing was, he had the realization that he'd had this bad self-esteem. And anyway, she said something like, well, I've been telling you that for years. And he said, yeah, but I needed to hear it from a man.
Right.
And then he said, well, in this case, it was myself. So anyway, he was joking. And anyway, it was a lovely conversation, actually, because it's. And Tucker made the point, who is your wife? Anyway, she said, now that you've realized that, our next decade is going to be amazing because we'll do it together.
Right.
Because once he realizes that he'd never felt good about himself and that he felt his life was a lie and, had this beautiful woman and 5 kids and this amazing life, but never felt good enough.
It's strange, isn't
It's
it?
very strange.
Well, I saw David Bowie the other day. He was I was well, not the other day, he's been dead for a while, but the video came up and he comes up and he goes, he goes, you'd think that if you were a famous rock star and you had all this money and you had a supermodel wife, you'd think it'd be really, really great. And then he looks and he goes, well, it is.
I saw one
So other people actually,
go through the same stuff.
no, they actually enjoy what they're, other people don't have self-esteem issues and they're well off.
Me, mind you, I saw one the other day with David Bowie, and it was him with his pink hair from his Ziggy Stardust days, with the lightning bolt on his face. And he's just having a conversation, and he's sort of saying about self-worth and self-esteem and people doing what they want. And, we've really got to, constantly look inward so that we make sure we don't lose ourselves to everything else.
Right.
Make sure that what we're doing is feeding our souls.
Oh, that's how we did
Yeah. Well, he had that persona. He used to talk about that being the persona that gave him the confidence to go out there into the world.
Right.
Anyway.
But the thing about things like RSD, rejection sensitivity, dysphoria, One thing about just like, for example, I've been researching this topic for a while, but I read this particular article and I went, that's really amazing. It's really good because if you have that and you read that, you go, it's really good. Just like, I believe psychoeducation is what a main thing counselors do, is, especially with ADHD, because you want to give people information that's relevant and what can help them get through those difficulties that people with neurodiverse difficulties have,
Absolutely.
that they have, and sometimes just knowing what things are called is so helpful, and a description of them, and you go, once you go, oh, that happens to me, oh, all of a sudden you can start to regulate it, like just like something we're doing physically, like just say even if we don't exercise, if we start exercising, just knowing that we're unfit and learning about what that is, and then that'll motivate us to go out. And just by getting a good description of some things, you go, I can fix that immediately because I know when that happens, and my wife and kids know when it happens. Because whenever I feel rejected, I freak out. Because a lot of people don't get angry, a lot of people switch off and shut down when this happens. So that it's not necessarily an anger thing, it might be completely. I had one client the other day, and their daughter, she was just switching off. Like when they were like, it's like something that one of my kids does who's neurodiverse in the supermarket, he just asks for things all the way around, like just asking for things. And so the similar thing, except in his case, he'll get angry, but in this case, his person was the kid was just becoming more like switched off. So it's a switch, I mean, when people feel rejected, and you see that with people with ASD as well, they get challenged because what was that show they had on? Love on the Spectrum?
Oh, yeah, but yes. Well, I only saw bits and pieces of that yet, but yeah, people loved it.
Right. But the thing is with that, you can see this type of thing there. Do you know what I mean? They're so sensitive about being rejected that they make this I was watching an American review of it. They're like, look what the Australians are making. We wouldn't look what they make in Australia. But that is a cool show, and it was popular in our house for a while. Love on the Spectrum.
Yeah, we watch the Gogglebox 5-minute overviews of it each week.
Right. Oh, what's that? They go
Oh,
through
you
the
know
highlights.
Gogglebox.
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, God. One of
Yeah.
my receptionists many years ago said that that was her guilty pleasure, was watching Gogglebox.
Gogglebox.
Yeah, so it basically has people watching TV and
Oh, and
making funny
reviewing.
comments during
Okay.
it. Yeah, it's a funny thing. So anyway, blah blah. Very amusing to me. But anyway, so yeah, rejection sensitivity syndrome. I think lots of people have it in different amounts, and anyone can get triggered, but I find people are very triggered at the moment. And like even at the moment, it's not taking much to get really triggered. Like we just had Australia Day here in Australia. And of course, there's a couple of our states have made it illegal to celebrate Australia Day on Australia Day for
When was Australia Day? What day was it?
Sunday.
I didn't even know.
So we were camping and there were two huge Australian flags. And so some people were arrested singing Waltzing Matilda on some steps in South Australia.
Right, well, that's a secret song.
Yes, so I shared it on Facebook and I got this whole anti-Nazi rhetoric, which I had no idea what it was about, and
We'll
just,
sing Matilda.
yeah, I didn't understand that at all. But anyway, but people are very triggered about things. So
Yeah.
obviously,
So people, and so what's similar to the triggering at the moment that's similar to RSD is that it's kind of a little bit of an unjustified trigger. Like it's not really like it's a problem that if you've got this, you really want to work on it. You really want to work on yourself. And be getting untriggered is a whole thing, like first being aware of the triggers, having the people around us aware of our triggers, and realize that often, so these things are with ADHD, but often different types of abuse or manipulation can make people very defensive. And over the last 4 years, things became polarized. 5 years. 5 years.
Crazy.
No, but people are still stuck in those positions a little
Yeah,
bit.
absolutely.
And on both sides of the polarized community, because it's not only with politics, it's with a whole bunch
Oh,
of
it's
things.
huge. It's huge.
And that
Absolutely.
people who used to be able to have a conversation find it more difficult because they're triggered. And part of that's too much time on the internet. Like, is that what's, and part of it's, who knows?
I heard someone say the other day, just because you have a lot of information in your head doesn't make you smart. I was like, damn. I got a lot of information rattling around up there.
Right. Well, if you're a healer, you want to logically apply it.
Well, that's what made me go down so many rabbit holes at the beginning of 2020, because once you started realizing, because they were talking about, say, let's go back to the basics of COVID, which I think we're allowed to talk about these days. The spike proteins in the jibbity jabs, there were over 220 patented spike proteins in the jabs, and each patent takes a long time to have. So all these people saying that it was magically made overnight and only took a, they'd been making this since the 1990s. This was the first opportunity for them to roll it out worldwide.
Oh, first, oh, it came up. That's
They'd
interesting.
tried a few times, apparently. So, that's the whole thing about Dr. David Martin. He's been talking about the patents associated with the COVID.
Well, they were on the back of, like, I can't remember that because I read a lot of that research too, and it was because I was at uni,
There
so.
was SARS coronavirus and MERS coronavirus and,
Yeah, but
all
they'd
sorts of
also
things.
experimented with put. Because the one that was made in England, it was a piggyback one. It was different to the MRA one. So they
Yeah,
piggybacked that.
AstraZeneca was a it was an adenovirus.
Yeah, and so they'd tried that before
Yeah.
and
And
unsuccessfully.
adenoviruses show up all the time in the bioresonance scan, as do the shedding from the main four ones, which
Right.
is really sad.
Well, it's like the studies showed what they do. And if people want to argue about that, but you can always just read the studies. Like I was at uni when and studying counselling, we were getting things sent to us about the effect, like the predictable effects of the lockdown, and
Yes.
they're really quite predictable,
Yeah.
right from the first month or two.
And I think people have lost a lot of resilience since then. It's,
Right,
I think the
okay, so that's
resilience has gone down. Because remember, there
resilience
was,
goes down, triggers come up.
yeah, absolutely.
So therefore, one way to help with RSD would be increasing resilience.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the best ways they've learned now to help with resilience is breathing. Because if you're, yeah, really, to breathe slower
Breathing
and
exercises,
breathe
I think you
deeper.
mean. Everyone will
No.
be saying, oh, I breathe all day, every day. I was
All
talking to my
right.
chiropractor just earlier on today, and he had a bad posture. He showed me a bad posture to stand in, where basically, the shoulders are in the wrong spot, your pelvis is tilted. And he said, and try to breathe. And it's true, you could only breathe in that tiny little upper third. Whereas if you tilt your pelvis and,
Forward.
and bend your knees a little bit and flatten the lower back, your breathing goes all the way down into the belly, and it's so instantaneous, the different breathing posture, because there's over 70 muscles that attach to the diaphragm.
Right.
So it's hardwired in there to connect with, your sympathetic nervous system, your vagus nerve, all sorts of things. So it's,
Right.
breathing is absolutely really important.
But they found that. And so another issue with neurodiversity, especially ADHD, is that it doesn't connect with the prefrontal cortex. And they found people from with severe child abuse, their prefrontal cortex doesn't work either.
Right.
And so what breath work can do is that if you're triggered and you breathe, right, because the triggering's stuck in the amygdala, right? It's stuck in the midbrain.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you react to that, you'll say something like, or maybe even move.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Strike, go to strike. And so it's, maybe you'll get aggressive. But they found that if you can breathe at that time, breathe at least 3 times, big deep breath, that can reduce the triggering and allow the nerve flow to get up to the top part of the brain.
Yeah.
And that's Dan Siegel did a lot of the work, the neurobiology on that. And so that, but a lot of people have been working on that. Also,
Nice.
Bessel van der Kolk wrote Body Keeps the Score. They're applying all types of yoga techniques for increasing emotional resilience and also becoming de-triggered, because a lot of people with, post-traumatic stress disorder, there's all sorts of reasons people are triggered.
Awesome. Excellent. So I hope so we went on a few tangents there, which is all good, all part of the fun.
Well, we ended up back to breathing.
Breathing is always good. Excellent, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.